67, the What's Happening sound, with you every weekend at home or on the road. Brad Crandall, your host. Ernest Hemingway's younger brother, Lester, is the president of New Atlantis, the tiniest republic in the world. All the details about this incredible island nation right after a song by Harper's Bazaar. Lester Hemingway, younger brother of the late Ernest Hemingway, is an internationally known writer, sportsman, and marine researcher. He's also the first president of the Republic of New Atlantis. Now, you may not have heard about this tiny nation, but its role in the pioneering field of ocean farming may be considerable. Lester, tell me, New Atlantis is a man-made island, right?
Right, but a man-made island, that is an artificial one, in Admiralty law, has just as much status as an absolutely natural island.
Now, is it really an island? Is it anchored?
It has been anchored, and it will probably continue to be anchored. But from time to time, we've had to replace it, because when high winds and gales come by, the only thing to do is to pick up the pieces and start over again.
Pick up thy island and go, right. Now, exactly where, if I were going to go look for New Atlantis, assuming that it was currently anchored and there were no storms in the offing, where would I find it?
Now you're talking. All right. 7 miles to the south west of Luana Point on the southwest coast of Jamaica.
Uh-huh.
It's just about opposite Montego Bay, but on the south coast.
And you're 7 miles off.
Mm-hmm.
So you're well
and
outside.
Jamaica only claims 3 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jamaican government has made a very affable statement that we are no threat to the peace of the Caribbean.
Well, that's nice to know, anyhow.
Right. believe in keeping our powder dry, and you see, it from time to time gets a little splashy out there. The waves can come right in on you.
Well, now, New Atlantis was originally conceived, as I understand it, as a kind of a, in a sense, a gag, but also with the idea of selling such things as postage stamps to collectors.
Every government has this right anywhere on Earth, and at the same time, governments are very wise not to take advantage of their right and violate it grossly or make people feel that they're taking advantage of them.
Mm-hmm.
New Atlantis, for instance, is not a member of the Universal Postal Union as yet. It has no right to be simply because it's not a member of the UN. And to become a member of the UN, we've got to have a permanent population.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you get a permanent population by building a little bit larger, solider, drier island.
You've got to have a problem in the island if you want a permanent population.
And give fellas a chance to camp out overnight and then give them a chance to camp for several months.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, build something good and strong and solid like a bank, a bar,
Yeah, bar sounds like a good idea.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely. I think the first bank bar in the world's history will probably be in New Atlantis.
Hey, that's a great thought, you know. A staggering bank. That's what everybody's always needed.
With staggered accounts. But the nicest thing about New Atlantis so far is it's kept its nose clean economically. It's taken advantage of no one, and it doesn't intend to. No stocks and bonds, no indebtedness, and this is the only government on Earth that doesn't owe anybody a nickel.
Yeah,
we're
that's
the only country in the black.
You realize, don't you, that you're going to cause all sorts of commotion once that gets
around.
Well,
we're giving everybody a kind of a shake of the head except the Quakers. They approve of us enormously.
Now, you originally founded New Atlantis as part of a series of research, as a research project, I suppose it would be the
right
proper description, for undersea research.
But the purpose of the country in itself is to promote marine research and at the same time be a small test tube for democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's nothing easier to research than a country where everybody has the ability to read and write, where nobody is without a job, and where we don't have any indigent poor that we have to support and thus make the state collect taxes. This way we're a tax-free country, and at the same time we have the capability of looking after ourselves.
In theory, there would be nothing whatever for the citizens to differ about. Has it worked out that way?
There have been very few things to differ about, and so far there hasn't been a harsh word. It's the most crime-free and peaceable area I know of.
Yeah, well, how are you going to have crime when the minute a guy tries to hide out, a storm blows him off?
Even on a good day, you can come pretty close to the edge.
Now, you're a marine researcher, and I know that you believe, as most marine researchers do, that the future for life on Earth lies really in what's underneath the sea. There's been a lot of talk, for example, about farming under the sea.
Right, and
these
the protein resources
fences
of the sea, I'm convinced, are capable of really dealing with the population explosion that this planet faces in the next few years in a manner in which probably no other resource can. Because if we can properly harvest even 25% of the available protein, we, meaning the people in the very fortunate countries of the world, will be able to help look after the people in the more unfortunate ones.
Well, this also means, doesn't it, that because of the natural reproductive cycle of the sea, that you don't have the problem you have with farming land of wearing it out or anything, that given decent processes, you're not going to destroy the ability of the sea to reproduce indefinitely.
Absolutely, but it means an awful lot more work in shallow water areas, learning how to breed shrimp and crawfish and other crustaceans commercially so that they can be harvested and so that we can enormously increase our annual take.
Uh-huh. Thank you very much, sir.
An honor, sir.
Our guest has been Lester Hemingway, younger brother of Ernest Hemingway and a noted sportsman, writer, and marine researcher. So-called hopeless children, all of them mentally retarded, have been given new hope and dignity by a Massachusetts couple. It's a warm, inspiring story just 4 minutes away on the Monitor Beacon. Arriving on schedule this Monday and Thursday, it's the 660 Fortune Special. Twice a week, the 660 pulls into Fortune Phone with an extra prize aboard. The player being called answers the qualifying question correctly, he'll win the prize. Either an MGM Playtape 2, a Vantage Electric watch, or a three-day vacation at the Downingtown Inn. The timetable changes every week, so keep track of the schedule by listening to WNBC. Out in White Plains, right this minute, a lady driver is pulling into a shopping center. She finds a parking place, rolls up the windows in case of rain, and hurries off. Oops, she forgot her keys. Oh, well, she'll be back soon. But before she's back, some teenage kid may spot those keys and take off for a joyride. Another youngster started on a life of crime. Don't help a good boy go bad. Whenever you park, even for a moment, lock your car and take your keys. The Conversation Station, WNBC, New York. Once more, you're back with Monitor, and it is now 17 minutes after the hour. What better time for the Anita Kerr Singers and a song called In the Morning.
In the morning, while the world was sleeping, I'm all alone.
12 years, a Southbridge, Massachusetts couple have been living proof of the biblical lesson of the Good Samaritan. They've given love, care, and affection to 18 mentally retarded children, many of whom were considered hopeless. Mr. and Mrs. Charles Kench live in a modest home, and Mr. Kench is an aircraft inspector in a nearby factory. Their reasons for taking the children into their home and the inspiring results are spelled out clearly as Mrs. Kench talks with Monitor reporter Joe Hyder.
Mrs. Kench, you and your husband, Charlie, over the years have made it a habit to take in and care for and love children. Why have you chosen retarded children for this?
I worked over in Mansfield Training School and Hospital, and I knew that a lot of these children could be helped by the love and care and a home of their own. So we purchased a home in Southbridge, and this is when we started our work. These children need a lot more care than children from an orphanage. And this is why my husband and I decided to go into this kind of work.
I understand he too was an orphan.
He was an orphan. He was placed in an orphanage at the age of 6 years old. And he always said that where he was, they never had too much. And he says to me, he says, these children of ours will have a lot of more things than I ever had. And by this way, if they ever need anything, they always seem to get it.
Mrs. Kench, are you and your husband, Charlie, financially well off?
No, by no means. We have bills as well as our next neighbor does, and plenty of other people. We have bills, plenty of bills. I've never had so many since I've had the children, but we don't mind it. We just ask God for our health and the health of our children.
And you've just moved into a fairly new home, haven't you?
Yes, they love their home. They have a television of their own. I think I may take in this other boy for a short time until they find a home for him.
So it means you may have to add on more rooms.
I think so.
Tell us how these youngsters have developed their talents.
Well, Carol, when Carol first came to us, she couldn't read or write, and today she's in a regular class doing very fine, and she hopes to become a nun someday. And Karen has advanced very well, and she wants to be a teacher. And the other children are all doing fine, too. I have four that are out working now, and they're on their own. And they have, two of my children have paper routes. And the other children, they're learning to save their money. Let's put it that way. I've taught them how to save money and buy different things for themselves.
Mrs. Kench, how long will you and your husband, Charlie, continue to take in these children who are in need of what you say is love and care and affection, which they don't get at a state home?
As long as God gives us our health, you can believe that. I'll always keep these children. I want to see them go through high school and to college. Both my husband and I do. And I know that God will help us, too, because these children need a home. And I'm trying to find more homes for these children. In fact, I have two homes now in mind that want to take in a few little girls and boys.
Mrs. Kench, this is wonderful, and I want to thank you and Mr. Charles Kench, your husband, both of Southbridge, Massachusetts, for your both for not only your home, but your hearts to these children who are certainly in need of this love and understanding.
Well, we thank you, too, very much, Mr. Hyder, for coming in for an interview. And all the children want to thank you. So, children, say thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Hyder.
And we thank you. This is Joe Hyder for Monitor.
In the land of plenty, where a man can fill his every need, why is there greed? In the land of plenty, why can't we find our peace of mind? In the land of plenty, where the hills still sound of Indian drums, why are there slums? In the land of plenty, in the land of plenty, where a child is loved to calm his fears, why are there tears? In the land of plenty, why are we sad? All of our years, in the land of plenty, where our fathers said all men are free, when will it be? In the land of plenty, in the land of plenty, where the talk of war rules all our lives, will men survive? In the land of plenty, will peace prevail, or will we fail? In the land of plenty,
Lopez on monitor. Say, does the slosh of a clothes washer or the hum of an air conditioner annoy you? Well, if so, it may mean you're well-educated. A University of Michigan research team found a direct correlation between education and noise irritation in a recent study. Their explanation was that college-educated people tend to live in a more protected environment. Yeah, I guess that's probably so. Certainly the campus is a very quiet place, undisturbed by any kind of extraneous noises, except maybe pep rallies, bonfires, demonstrations, panty raids, and things like that. Severinsen's Orchestra and One Step Above. You're always one step ahead when you stay with Monitor nationwide every weekend. KGEE, Bakersfield, California, serves the southern San Joaquin Valley. Monitor returns shortly with The World and Washington, an analysis in depth of the United States' role in the world, produced by NBC News. This is Brad Crandall. Monitor, the sound entertainment feature every weekend on the NBC Radio Network.